The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
I want to talk today about the important sort of theatrical release of the movie in 400 theaters, why it's important that we do well this weekend, and urge you to sort of round up the family, round up the gang, round up the group, round up your drinking buddies, round up everybody, and go this weekend and see it in a theater. It was made for the theater. I'm going to do today an in-depth discussion of the long Q&A that Philip Bump did with me in the Washington Post. He's the national correspondent, and I'm going to go point through several items that he raises. And finally, I want to look at Dante's examination of the controversial question of whether non-Christians can be saved. This is the Dinesh D'Souza Show.
This voice. The times are crazy, in a time of confusion, division, and lies. We need a brave voice of reason, understanding, and truth. This is the Dinesh D'Souza Podcast.
The documentary 2000 Mules goes into theaters, 400 theaters this weekend, starting, well, there are a few early shows even on Thursday evening. This evening, but it really begins four shows a day tomorrow, which is Friday. And then it continues, and it'll run pretty much as long as people are seeing it. In fact, if we do really well in the theater, we might even expand to more theaters the following week. So it's important for us to do well. And this is a great way to see the movie. In fact, I make these movies for the theater. It was heartbreaking to me with the last one, Trump Card, where I was all set to go in 1,000 theaters, in fact. And then COVID, theater shut down, all these mask requirements. And so I kind of had to pull the movie, which was, as I say, very hard to do. But with this one, what's so cool is we had done a very limited theatrical release. We essentially rented the theaters out May 2nd, May 4th. And we did so well that the independent theaters, a lot of them came to us and were like, hey, we'd love to have this movie in the theater in a normal release. So, you know, this is all kind of jumbled because it violates every kind of normal rule for releasing a movie. Normally, you go out in the theater, you try to hang in there for 2, 3, maybe 4 weeks. Then there's a kind of mandatory gap. Then you release the movie for digital download and streaming. And then later you try to get some sort of a deal with an Epix or Netflix. So that's the traditional formula. Well, that formula I kind of tore up and threw out the window for a variety of reasons. One of which is that this is the first film I've released in a real age of censorship, where we're blocked in all the normal things that we used to do and do habitually. So can't advertise on Facebook and can't put the trailer even up on YouTube. And I was reluctant to put the movie on Amazon Prime or Apple iTunes. Didn't want it to be anywhere where they could, where the left could like pull it down or create some campaign or take down this movie. It's disinformation. It's not disinformation, it's actually information, but they want to suppress information in the name of suppressing disinformation. So what happened is that we did the limited theatrical, then the virtual premiere, then the digital downloads and streaming, and now, kind of in almost inverse order, like opening weekend this weekend. It's crazy. But you know, a lot of people were writing Debbie and me and saying, oh, you know, I'd like to have my Republican group. Can you arrange for us to get a digital print so we can show it at our local church? This is very hard for us to organize, quite honestly. We're not a studio with like 300 people to do this kind of thing. So I'm thrilled to say, listen, you know what? I don't have to organize these one-off screenings. The great news is it's in the theater. It's in your local theater. And if you go to 2000meals.com, it'll link you to ticketing sites like Fandango, Atom. And then you just put in your zip code. It'll tell you the theater near you. And, you know, take the family. Even if you've seen it, it's one thing to see it at home on a television or on a computer. It's a whole other thing to go see it in the theater with a bunch of other people who are fascinated, interested in this critical topic. It's a completely different experience. Also, the price is really good because it's the normal price of a movie ticket. So whatever your theater charges for other movies, you know, $10, $12. Now, obviously, if you go hog wild on the popcorn and you go hog wild on the large Coke, you know, then you end up paying $30. But that's only because of the outrageous prices of those things in theaters these days. Now, that's by way of update on the release of the movie. And as for me, I'm actually making my way to Arizona, where Turning Point USA is doing a big screening on Sunday. And I'm also speaking at the Maricopa Republican luncheon on Saturday. And so Arizona, as you know, a key state covered in the movie itself. I'm very eager to present these ideas to the Republican establishment. By the way, people who are in a position to do something about this. Now, the Maricopa audit was very important. It pointed out to all kinds of procedural and other types of irregularities. And so for me, it's not the movie or the audit, but you kind of have to put the two together. It's the Maricopa audit talks about the ways in which the system kind of failed and enabled a heist. And then the movie actually shows you the heist taking place. Now, there have been a lot of efforts on the part of the left to dispute the movie. And that's what I'm going to go into in the next couple or few segments. I'm going to focus really on Philip Bump of the Washington Post. But let me just say that, you know, the first round that the left deployed was their fact checkers and it, kind of their B team, I would say. They tried to, like, prevent people from seeing the movie. And some of them are still doing this. You know, the good old, I've seen this movie, so you don't have to. There's an article, I think, today or yesterday in the Daily Beast to this effect. And I interpret the article as fear on the part of the left. They're scared that their own audience will freak out if they see this movie. Democrats will freak out. Why? Because Democrats don't want to win by cheating. So what the left has to do, the left, these are basically vile people who, some of them, you know, they know that they cheated. They're like, you know what, we got to keep our side from finding out because, so they put out this, you know, we've seen it so you don't have to make up your mind. We'll make up your mind for you. Just read our version of what we saw. So this is like Crooks and Liars 101 at the Daily Beast. But when we come back, more on Philip Bump and the Washington Post. When Mike Lindell developed his My Slippers, Debbie and I wanted to get them right away. Mike has taken over 2 years to develop these My Slippers. They're designed to wear indoor or outdoor all day long. They're made with MyPillow foam and impact gel to help prevent fatigue. And they're also made with quality leather suede. For a limited time, Mike is offering the Super Blowout Sale of the Year on his slippers. Save $90 with promo code Dinesh. The regular price of these My Slippers, $139.98. And now on sale, $49.98. Wow. Debbie and I just love ours. I got the moccasins. Debbie got the slip-ons. Go to MyPillow.com and use promo code Dinesh, or you can call 800-876-0227. But to get the discount, you need to use promo code D-I-N-E-S-H Dinesh. I want to commend Philip Bump of the Washington Post. He's their national correspondent. And he has with me a lengthy Q&A dialogue, which he has printed almost verbatim. There are some minor edits, but I have no quarrel with the way that the interview is presented. And it's very long. I don't know. It looks like 6,000, 7,000 or 8,000 words. It was about 23 pages when I printed it out in transcript. I'm one of these guys who can't read on the computer. I kind of have to print it out. Debbie's like, you're so old school. I'm like, yeah, I am old school. I kind of have neat pieces of paper. And sometimes I need a little bit of a pen or a highlighter. And what I find funny about the interview, by the way, is that, and I've never really seen this, not just in the Washington Post, but in any newspaper, that Philip Bump highlights the interview as it is published. published. He has yellow highlights running through the interview. And it's almost as if he's kind of like saying, only read the highlighted parts, which I think are the parts where he thinks he came out well. Now, I think it's interesting because the highlights are obviously a relatively small part of the overall interview. And I think maybe that's a sign that Philip Bump thought that he got the better of me only in these yellowed sections. But you shouldn't pay attention to that. You should read the whole thing. I mean, look, Philip Bump has every right to highlight, if you will. And quite honestly, what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you my own highlights now, verbal highlights, if you will, of the same interview. And what I want to get at is I want to expose how difficult it is for these guys to poke holes in the film. And the difficulty that they have is in attacking the totality of the film. It's kind of like if you're a defense attorney and you're looking at a case that's been presented to you which has many elements. And so what you try to do is you try to pretend that there's only one part to the case or there's only one element, and you go after that relentlessly as if to say that if you were able to debunk that, somehow you're debunking the case as a whole. And now what Philip Bump tries to do, and, you know, I think he thinks he's playing journalist and kind of evaluating the film, but in fact, he's playing debunker. And what he's trying to do is poke holes in it. That's absolutely his prerogative, but he needs to be self-conscious about what he's doing. All right, so he begins really by asking me, how do you know that these mules were paid? And I tell him, I say, well, look, the reason I know is there's three or four ways to know. But the first way is that the way this whole thing got started is a whistleblower came forward to True the Vote and basically said, I'm doing this. And I got paid, and I'm not alone. I'm part of a larger group that's doing this, and all of us got paid. So that's pretty good evidence right there. Now, of course, as often happens with whistleblowers or informants, they're scared. They know that they've done something not only wrong, but criminal. And so they're like, I don't want my name to be used, but I'm describing an operation, and you can verify for yourself if this operation is in fact taking place. And so what does True the Vote do? They say, okay, well, we'll buy the cell phone geo-tracking data and we'll look for other mules. And that's exactly what they did. Now, Bump jumps in and he goes, wait a minute, that's not in the movie, the anonymous informant. And I go, well, yeah, it's not in the movie because the guy's anonymous. I couldn't very well interview him in the movie. And I say that, you know, as a journalist, you should know that the movie operates in conjunction with some formal reports. True the Vote has submitted a fairly detailed report to the state of Georgia. They talk about the whistleblower. The state of Georgia is trying to find the whistleblower. You know all this. So even though this particular episode is not in the movie, it certainly is part of the evidence that the mules got paid. Now, Bump kind of pivots away from this once he realizes that there actually is real evidence. It isn't just the mules taking photos of the ballots going in. First of all, that's pretty convincing by itself. It's pretty convincing for this reason. The mules are not taking photos of themselves. There's not a single case I can see where the mule is stepping in front of the box and taking a photo of himself or wearing an I voted sticker or any of that. This is not about that. This is taking photos of the ballots going in. And if you think about it, what reason is there to do that? There is none. Unless you have to show, hey, listen, I was there. Look at my timestamp. It was 2 a.m. in the morning, just like you told me to go at night. I dropped in the ballots. I need to get paid. Think about the mule in the movie who comes in on the bike, drops in the ballots. He's about to take off. And then he turns around. He's like, oh, whoa, wait a minute. I remember now. I got to take a photo. So all of this behavior is inexplicable unless it is the way to prove that you did the job and get paid. There's no one has offered any other rational explanation. Now, Philip Bump tries to make some nonsensical, I've seen other people who take similar photos and so on. And I consider this just to be verbal garbage because it does not explain the facts as you see them in the official surveillance video itself. Now, Philip Bump goes, have you talked to the whistleblower? And I go, no, I haven't talked to the whistleblower. This, the whistleblower came to True the Vote. This is actually several months ago. In fact, it was before True the Vote, and I sat down to review all this evidence. A True the Vote investigator spoke to the whistleblower, and he highlights that as if it's like a telling point. Dinesh has not himself spoken to the whistleblower. And my point is, whoop-dee-doo. No one denies that there was a whistleblower, and that's what got the whole thing started. How else would True the Vote know in what direction to go? Some of us wish we could rewind the clock when it comes to our health, exercising, climbing stairs, all the stuff that young people do, take for granted. These aren't things that have to stop just because you get older. Well, neither do you have to just endure and suffer the normal aging aches and pains. Now there's a 100% drug-free solution. It's called Relief Factor. Relief Factor supports your body's fight against inflammation. That's the source of aches and pains. The vast majority of people who try Relief Factor order more because it works for them. Debbie's a true believer. She loves using Relief Factor when her shoulder was acting up. Frozen shoulder. This was the only thing that worked for her, and she knows if she stops taking it, well, the pain's going to come right back. So she's like, I'm not going to be without this again. You too can benefit. Try it for yourself. Order the 3-week quick start for the discounted price of just $19.95. Go to relieffactor.com or call 833-690-7246 to find out more about this offer. That number again, 833-690-7246, or go to relieffactor.com. Feel the difference. I'm continuing my discussion of the dialogue I had with Philip Bump of the Washington Post, a lengthy article, several thousand words long. And Bump likes to focus. He tried to, well, it seemed like initially the whole interview was going to be about the bike guy. And he says, you cannot see the bike guy putting in multiple ballots. And I say, first of all, the fact that you can't see it. And when what I mean by that is you're sitting in your armchair and you're looking at a screen and you can't tell based on that how many ballots are going. I say it doesn't follow that True the Vote investigators can't tell. Why? Because they're going to be looking at this footage not only much more closely with a kind of magnifying glass, so to speak, but they're also looking at it with trained eyes. They're able to estimate the width of the ballots going in, which is not to say that they know the exact number, but they can tell the difference between around 1 or 2 ballots, 5 or 6 ballots, 10 or 12 ballots, because it creates a different kind of width as you start sticking this little sheaf of ballots in there. Now, I agree for myself, I can't tell with the bike guy alone how many ballots he's putting in. But that's not why we featured him. That particular clip is aimed at showing him taking the photo. So what happens is, let's remember we're dealing here, by the way, not with well-taken surveillance footage. We're dealing with grainy footage. We're dealing with cameras that aren't always aimed at the right place. So what we have to do is say, well, look at this particular image and look at this for, because the guy happened to drop ballots on the ground. You can obviously see that this guy has multiple ballots. It might have been more difficult to see had he smoothly slipped them in, but because he dropped a bunch, it's pretty obvious there's more than one ballot. In other cases, you can clearly see multiple ballots going in. In this bike guy case, so it was interesting because he came back to take the photo. That was the significance of that. But see, what Philip Bump wants is he wants every image to satisfy every definition. So we have the bike guy. Yeah, okay, we see him taking pictures. Where's the multiple ballots in that photo? Where's the multiple ballots in that video? So what I say to him is, I say, listen, you know, if you don't have context and you aren't able to see the totality of the picture, it's always easy to misrepresent things. I gave him the example of, in the Rittenhouse case, a detective with a straight face testified that the Antifa thugs weren't chasing Rittenhouse. They were just running in the same direction. And of course, once you look at the video and you look at the video from different angles, it becomes obvious to the jury, no, they're chasing Rittenhouse. And that's the point I want to make, is once you see the movie and you see not a video or an image, but you see the videos and you put them together and you combine them with the geo-tracking evidence, well, then that settles the case. But of course, for Philip Bump, he's applying, and I complain about this, I tell him, you're applying a kind of impossible standard. You're asking a movie to do things that movies can't do. Now, Phillips goes on now to talk about let me see here. He's talking about, he's talking about standards of proof. And he goes, Dinesh, why didn't you show the raw geo-tracking data on the screen? And I said, in effect, well, the geo-tracking raw data is like a sea of numbers. And he goes, well, yeah, but you can show a sea of numbers and then you can plot a graph and you can show on the graph how those numbers correspond to the actual movements of a mule. And I go, well, we actually did show graphs in the movie of that. But the problem with you, I say to Philip Bump, is that whenever you produce a standard of proof, that itself can always be open to question. So, for example, if I put a graph up there with a sea of numbers and then I show a map with a mule moving, you can always say, how do I know, prove to me, Dinesh, that that graph corresponds exactly to that map? And then I can say, well, I can bring in a geo-tracking expert, an academic, let's say, at the University of Texas, who would then say, well, yes. And then you'd be like, well, who's that guy? What are his credentials? How do we know that he's telling the truth? So what I'm trying to get at is at some level, you can always push every demonstration, every proof, one step back and demand to know, but how do we know that that's accurate? And this creates, again, a standard that is preposterous. I made the obvious point. Listen, no one's claiming that geo-tracking, that this isn't authentic geo-tracking. True, the voters filed a complaint with the state of Georgia. They might say, well, these are still legal ballots delivered illegally, but they're not even saying that the geo-tracking is somehow invalid or that geo-tracking is not a useful tool in order to identify and locate mules. So what Bump is doing is coming up with a guy who is not an expert on geo-tracking, is coming up with these novel theories that really no expert in the field actually shares. All right. So when we come back, I'm going to continue this exploration and I'm going to look at Bump's challenge to me on the validity of geo-tracking. Let's face it, America is facing huge challenges, soaring inflation, the worsening crisis at our southern border, alarming crime rates, and radical ideas being forced on our nation's children. It's time to join forces with an organization that truly loves America. This organization is AMAC, the Association of Mature American Citizens. It's America's premier conservative 50-plus organization. My friends at AMAC are action-oriented and fight every day to represent your interests. Join today. Go to amac.us/Dinesh. You'll start getting amazing benefits, discounts on travel, cell phones, restaurants, all while fighting to preserve America and the causes that conservatives care about. For just $16 a year, you can join forces with AMAC and 2.3 million Americans who share your values. Debbie and I are proud members of AMAC. You can be one too. America needs you, and you need AMAC. Go to amac.us/Dinesh and join or renew today. I'm continuing a kind of highlight or analysis of my conversation with Philip Bump in the Washington Post. And he disputes the validity, or at least the precision and the accuracy of geo-tracking based upon an expert that he interviewed, one guy, who said, well, it's only accurate to about 30 feet. Well, that's not true, but let's say it is true. I don't think it changes our conclusions at all for the simple reason that you've got a drop box and you've got a mule within 30 feet. Remember, a human body is 5 or 6 feet. So 30 feet puts you basically within 3 or 4 human lengths of the drop box. You're in that vicinity. You're in that geo fence or circle. Okay. And if it was only one drop box, you could make you could say, well, wait a minute, maybe the guy was, you know, stopped to eat some popcorn, or was reaching for his wallet, happened to stop within that radius. But this is why True the Vote's high bar, and by the high bar, I mean 10 or more drop boxes, totally settles the issue. Because quite frankly, if you're within 30 feet of 10 or more drop boxes, obviously you are going to those drop boxes to do what? Well, there's only one thing you can do. See, remember, these aren't post boxes. You can't be writing a letter to your best friend from college. These drop boxes have one purpose, and that is to put in mail-in ballots. They're ballot drop boxes. So the only reason to go to them is to dump ballots. So, in fact, there's a guy, you know, who made a comment on social media. He goes, Dinesh, you know, he goes, listen, he goes, what if I were to show that your phone was within 30 feet of a bunch of gay bathhouses? Would you be okay with me saying that you're a regular frequenter of gay bathhouses, Dinesh, and that I have proof that you did that? And I replied in a kind of a quote tweet, and I say, hey, pal, listen, if you can find my phone within 30 feet of, let's say, 10 or more gay bathhouses in the period of, let's say, 2 weeks, yeah, you can reasonably conclude that I'm a regular customer. Why else would I be within a close vicinity of not one, not two, not three, but 10 or more bathhouses? So yes, use your own common sense and draw your own conclusions. Now, Philip Bump comes back here and he goes, you know, the January 6th situation wasn't the same because all that the geo-tracking is doing is showing whether or not people are in the vicinity of a large building. It's not trying to pinpoint their location with complete accuracy. And I say, that's not true. That's not true because if you look at the case that the government is making, it's not just a matter of we're going to use the geo-tracking to show that this guy was within, you know, 30 feet of the Capitol. They've got to prove that the guy was inside the building, which is to say he was inside the door as opposed to outside the door. And they couldn't do that if geo-tracking wasn't, in fact, precise. Now, we're having this kind of academic debate, but of course, the simple truth of it is people who use geo-tracking for any reason, Uber drivers, they know to a very close degree of accuracy. Even if there are three cars, one behind the other, they know which car it is. They know which side of the street it is. They know that the geo-tracking is accurate to within a few feet. If you take your cell phone, you go into some tall grass, throw your phone. You don't know where it is. And then find your phone. You'll notice it doesn't take you to within 30 feet of your phone. You're looking in the tall grass. Where's my phone? It takes you right to the phone. So here you have a case where the left, although they celebrated geo-tracking in the January 6th case, is now suddenly trying to act like this is a mystical, rather unreliable, not very precise. It only has to be precise enough to put you at or in the immediate vicinity of a Dropbox. This is not a matter even though geo-tracking can be accurate to between 12 and 18 inches. You don't need that kind of accuracy for a Dropbox. You just have to show the guy was there. And then he was there, and then he went to the next place. He picked up the ballots at a stash house. He went on to the next Dropbox, and the next one. All right. Let's turn to the next point. And this is the good old show me video of the same mule at multiple Dropboxes. Now, let me just say that I am going to do that, and Truth the Vote is going to do that. We're going to do that by producing video of the same mule at different Dropboxes. We didn't do that in the movie, and I want to actually begin by telling you why we didn't do it. We didn't do it because the footage is so bad. First of all, most Dropboxes have no footage. And so you can have a mule going to 7 Dropboxes and there's no footage on 6 of them. You only have that guy in 1 Dropbox. So in that case, you can't show the same guy at more than a Dropbox, not because we're concealing evidence, but because there is no evidence. The states that were supposed to install the surveillance video didn't do that. But there are cases where we have the same guy at more than one Dropbox. The problem is the footage is so grainy, it's not obvious it's the same guy. The guy's shrouded, you can't see his face. But we do know it's the same guy. Why? It's the same cell phone ID. And so even though the image is fuzzy, when we come back here to the simple point that electronic or digital or DNA evidence is better than eyewitness evidence. And this is, by the way, well known. It's well known in murder trials because very often the eyes aren't clear. Or two guys look kind of similar, or I didn't get a close enough point of view, or some of the guy's features are similar, but others are not. But on the other hand, just as if you leave your blood in two places, it can be definitively established that you were there. With the same degree of certainty, a cell phone ID, this geo-tracking evidence is just as good in establishing the location, not of you, because you can have given your cell phone to your brother or to your wife, but that your cell phone was that at those locations is really not open to reasonable doubt. Well, it's finally happened. The Fed is realizing the dire straits our economy is in thanks to our loose and irresponsible monetary policy. Apparently, you can't just spend trillions every year with no repercussions. Now, to play catch-up, the Fed has been raising rates and plans to 7 times this year. You're already seeing the ripple effects in the housing market as people's buying power diminishes. Have you considered what could happen in the stock market if our economy stalls out? Well, don't wait till that happens. Take some of your profits from the stock market now and solidify them with gold from Birch Gold. Throughout history, gold has maintained its value better than any other investment in the world. Text Dinesh to 989898 for a free, zero-obligation information kit on holding gold in a tax-sheltered retirement account. I buy my gold from Birch Gold, and you should too. With countless 5-star reviews and A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau, I trust the professionals at Birch Gold. Text Dinesh to 989898 and secure the gains you've made while you can. I'm continuing my discussion of the Philip Bump interview with me in the Washington Post. And now we turn to the issue of the latex gloves. Now, Philip Bump agrees that it's super stupid for the fact checkers to say, as some have, it was really cold, Dinesh. That's why they were wearing gloves. Well, they weren't wearing woolen gloves. They were wearing latex gloves. So Bump realizes that the only alternative explanation is COVID. And I point out to him that, well, that would work if you find that people are wearing the latex gloves all the way through. But as it turns out in the video, we don't see the latex gloves actually in the 2020 election, in early voting or election day. But we see the gloves appear in the Georgia runoffs. And they begin to show up basically starting about December 23rd all the way through the runoff. I think the date of the runoff was January 5th. And I point out that there was an indictment in Arizona in actually it was in the Yuma County area, and the FBI was able to bust those traffickers by using fingerprints, the fingerprints that they left on multiple ballots. So here's Bump. He goes, he says, I didn't find any evidence for that. And I go, because I have all the articles, I go, you didn't see the evidence of the indictment in Arizona? He goes, no, I did see the evidence of the indictment in Arizona. And then I say, you didn't see that in the indictment? He says, well, I did see it online. He goes, but I didn't know it was publicly known. And I go, well, it doesn't have to be publicly known for the mules to know. In other words, the crooks who are organizing this operation are like, wow, they caught us on the fingerprint thing. Let's all start wearing gloves. It doesn't have to be in the public domain for them to know that that was part of the reason that the FBI busted them. So again, this is Bump sort of, you know, sort of trying to do hair splitting with me when I think as a reporter, he should know better. He should know, well, yeah, usually if you're the mafia and they catch you and wow, they busted us on this one, word gets out among all the five families. Listen, let's start doing it differently because they got us, you know, in Vegas on this particular one. All right, so that doesn't really work either. And then we turn to this case, and it's a solitary case, by the way, completely misrepresented by the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Georgia Election Board disputes findings of 2,000 mules. They did no such thing. 2,000 mules advances 242 mules in Atlanta alone. They're talking about one solitary case. And this is a case where you see a video, by the way, in the movie of a guy putting in ballot after ballot after ballot. And the Georgia investigator says, in effect, those were ballots of his family members. And of course, Bump echoes it. Georgia reached out to him. Found out he's just dropping off ballots for his family members, which he's allowed to do, right? And I'm thinking to myself, do you even know how this works? First of all, how would Georgia know that? How would they know that he dropped off ballots of his family members? Well, one way to do would be to go retrieve the ballots. Can Georgia do that? No, because the moment that the ballots opened, the ballot is detached from the envelope. The ballot then goes in with all the other ballots. So tell me, what is the way for Georgia to, quote, verify that this guy dropped off ballots for family members? Simple answer, there is no way. So all that the Georgia investigator did is essentially ask, does this guy have other people that he's related to, A, and B, talk to him. Whose ballots did you drop off? I dropped off the ballots of my family members. Oh, I see. Excellent. Well, that's, of course, allowed. No problem here. This investigation is closed. I looked at to see what external evidence did Georgia produce that this guy. So, you know, here's the interesting point. Philip Bump is asking of me that I sort of cross every T, I dot every I. You have the burden of proof. Show me. So here's Georgia making a claim. We verified that this guy was only dropping off the ballots of family members. And I'm saying, where's the verification? Show me what you did that will convince me or any reasonable person that you now know for sure that those were not traffic ballots, that you weren't paid for those, but rather you were merely doing your family a favor, making it easy for them, dropping off family ballots. And so then Bump gets kind of indignant and he basically goes, well, you don't trust the state of Georgia? And I go, well, no, but let me tell you why. The reason I don't trust the state of Georgia is that right after the election, Kemp, Raffensperger all pronounced this was a completely secure election, no problem. And I make the point that when someone says that, they're now in an awkward position. If you now have to admit later that you were the sheriff and a major like robbery took place under your nose, you had no idea, you feel like a buffoon. And so you're going to try to do your best not to make yourself look bad. And I make the point, and he goes, well, so you trust Greg Phillips's geo-tracking, but you don't trust the state of Georgia. And I go, well, you're a reporter. You're supposed to apply a certain kind of skepticism or distrust, particularly towards government institutions. These government institutions are bureaucracies. And we all know that bureaucracies developed entrenched interests. The bureaucracy itself is a kind of animal that defends itself against any attempts to sort of expose it or critique it. And I said, you know, as a journalist, are you trying to tell me that we should accept with complete credulity? The FBI says this, the state of Georgia says that. Oh, that's enough for us. The calls are needed. We don't need to do any investigating. See, this is the approach. The remarkable phenomenon is our journalists have now become like cover-up artists for the state. And in this sense, I regret to say it seems like Philip Bump is not really an exception.
Imagine the lifelong impact of a journey to the Holy Land. Surrounded by like-minded travelers, picture yourself stepping foot in iconic locations right out of Scripture. Join Dr. Sebastian Gorka and Dinesh D'Souza on this life-enriching Israel tour, November 30th through December 9th, 2022. For more information, call 855-565-5519 or visit standwithisraeltour.com.
I'll conclude in this segment my discussion of the Philip Bump interview with me in the Washington Post. Toward the end, Bump goes to the point where he says, in effect, that these are, quote, lawful ballots that have been handled fraudulently. So let's pause here because Bump is now kind of making a concession. He's echoing Raffensperger, by the way, in doing this. And he seems to be saying, well, all right, I'll grant you that if a mule delivers a ballot, that you can't do that. That's illegal paid trafficking. It's not legal in Georgia. Quite frankly, it's not legal in any state. Even states that permit harvesting don't permit paid ballot trafficking. But says Bump, echoing Raffensperger. And by the way, this is a point also that's been implied and made by Ben Shapiro. What if it's a legal ballot that has been merely illegally delivered? And he says that he's quoting Raffensperger, that he says that these are still lawful ballots that have been handled fraudulently. So he says explicitly in an interview that these were lawful ballots still and should be counted. I say, he doesn't know that. There's no way for him to know that. And let's think about why that's the case. How would Raffensperger know that something is a legal ballot? The point I want to make is that Raffensperger was essentially engaging in a kind of hypothetical reasoning. The fact that the mules delivered the ballots doesn't by itself tell you whether those ballots were legal or illegal in the way they were cast in the first place. In other words, do they represent, let's just say, a live voter who filled out the ballot? Or do they represent, let's say, a dead guy who shouldn't be voting at all and somebody else filled out the ballot in his name? Raffensperger, by the way, cannot tell which it is. There's no way for him to know. And actually, I think Bump knows this. But what he wants to do is give the benefit of the doubt to all those ballots. And by the way, again, if we're talking about a small number of ballots, I would say, well, okay, we don't really know. But we're talking about hundreds of thousands of ballots. So anyone who wants to maintain or presume, and this is a dogmatic assumption, these were all legal ballots. You have to ask the question, how would hundreds of thousands of legal ballots magically end up in the possession of far left-wing nonprofit groups embedded in the inner city? Is it a case where hundreds of thousands of people are like, well, you know, I don't really want to go to the post office. And even though there are these mail-in drop, I don't think I want to go to the mail-in drop box myself. I think I'm going to go to this left-wing organization instead, give them my ballot so that they can hire a mule to go with gloves in the middle of the night surreptitiously. And why would you need to be surreptitious if these are all legal ballots? Then why not simply announce, yes, we've been collecting ballots from these housing complexes and all these people have been stopping by our offices, an unbelievable procession of people just dropping off their legal ballots for us to then deliver. I mean, this operation is so preposterous. So this possibility is so insane that no one even dares to spell it out. They just proclaim, these are all legal ballots. No, they are not legal ballots. They're illegal ballots. But then, of course, bump returns. So tell me exactly where they came from. And now this is a case of demanding something that A, cannot be known by me, and B, is an unreasonable demand in the first place. And let me say why that is. If I were to show you a crime, I show you the crime scene, I show you the criminal, has a gun, and I show you, boom, 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 he's shooting people, dead, one by one. Now you come up to me and say, well, yeah, but, you know, we do see all that and everything, but where do you get the gun? And I say, I don't know where he got the gun, but what I can show you is that there are 10 gun stores in the area. He could have gotten the gun from any of those. So while I'm unable to locate the source of the gun, I am, in fact, showing you the crime and showing you the gun. And all I need to show, I believe, is that he could have gotten it from one of 10 different places. He had access to the gun. He not only had the motive, he not only committed the crime, but he had every opportunity to do so because it was not that hard to get a hold of a gun. Yeah, but where did he get this particular gun? So this is really what Bump is getting at, is he's basically saying, because he knows that the ballots have now been separated from the envelope. So there's no way for me to reverse engineer it. If there was, I would. And find out where that ballot came from. Was it from some comatose, you know, nursing home patient who doesn't even know where she is? Was it collected in a dorm where the student graduated, but the ballot still arrived there and was filled out by the left-wing nonprofit organization? Was it collected at a homeless shelter? Well, listen, if you want to have your lunch or your soup, you know, sign right here. We'll fill out the rest for you. Again, we have an interview in the movie with Hans von Spakovsky. He outlines all the different ways. And he's not, by the way, he's not just conjecturing. He's drawing his conclusions based upon all kinds of voter fraud cases over the past 10 or 20 years that used all these exact same techniques. So the party of fraud, the Democrats, we're saying is they're using the same MO, the same kind of criminal schemes that they were able to use on a small scale. By the way, going back to the 19th century, but what made the difference in 2020 was that the rules changed and the absentee or mail-in ballot, which was previously a small part of the election, now becomes a huge part of the election. And so the fraudsters go, well, you know what? This is our golden opportunity. Here's our chance to ramp up the fraud, not fivefold or even tenfold, but 20-fold and maybe 50-fold. I'm continuing my discussion of the Paradiso, where Dante raises this bold and controversial question, which is, can non-Christians be saved? Now, it appears that in the Inferno, Dante answered to that question, no. Why? Because virtuous pagans, if you will, are in limbo. They are in the kind of outer ring of the Inferno. And so it appears that Dante's answer, but it turns out it's only his initial answer, is that there's no place in heaven for anyone who isn't explicitly converted to the Christian faith. But here, Dante appears to give at least a more complex answer, and he does it through a radical shift in perspective. Dante is now in a sense, in the outer heavens, looking back at Earth. I mentioned how he looks back and smiles at the paltry insignificance of the Earth. In a sense, what Dante seems to be saying is not just that I have a different angle or viewpoint, but I have a wider vision. And even my wider vision is not God's wider vision, because God has, and God has alone, the God's eye view, where he sort of sees everything all together and at once. Dante doesn't have that perspective, but he does have a larger perspective. And in that larger perspective, Dante raises the question of whether it could be that at the end of time, is it possible that the virtuous pagan, Dante talks about the Ethiop and the Persian, could the Ethiop and the Persian say, in a landscape removed from Earth, when in a sense everything becomes clear, condemn the Christians who actually had the truth, but A, didn't really care, B, lived their lives as if they didn't, C, invoked Christianity to do bad things as if to say that I'm justified in doing it because I'm a Christian, so I can loot, I can sell indulgences, all the corruption, not just in politics, but also in the church. Look at, for example, the way that Dante is unsparing in his analysis of the popes and what they did using the name of Christ. Dante will have none of it. And so he does not hesitate to sort of turn the lens on the Christian community itself in Europe and say, in effect, you know, you always want to point your finger and condemn all these people in remote lands. Oh, they're not going to make it. But Dante's point is, leaving whether they will make it or not, they have with equal justice and maybe even more the right to turn around and say, you're supposed to be a Christian. You're supposed to have the truth. Why are you acting no differently than me, or in some cases a lot worse than me? Where do you think you belong? And of course, Dante has for this strong biblical support, which is to say, and I'm now quoting from the Gospel of Matthew, not everyone that saith unto me, Lord, Lord, shall enter the kingdom of heaven. And so now we move into Canto 20, where we're introduced to King David. This is not a surprise. We're in a canto where we're going to see some emperors. We also find the Emperor Trajan, who is a Roman emperor, but lived after the time of Christ. But what is surprising is not known to have been a Christian. In fact, if you look at his correspondence, some of which we have now, he appears to be somewhat uncomfortable, not actively hostile. He's not a persecutor of Christians, but he seems to regard the Christians as kind of a nuisance and perhaps a kind of a problem, maybe a problem for the empire and for the administration of the empire. So what is Trajan doing, not just here in paradise, but kind of in one of the upper rings, upper circles of paradise? We'll come back to that. There's also the Emperor Constantine. And this is also worth a brief remark. Dante has, in the Divine Comedy, on multiple occasions, regretted the kind of merging of church and state that occurred as a result of the Constantinian conversion. Remember, Constantine is the first Roman emperor to convert to Christianity. Essentially, he makes Christianity the official religion of the Roman state. And that this has the benefit that Christianity is carried on the back of the Roman legions to the far-flung reaches of the Roman Empire. Arguably, all of Europe would not have been converted, at least not so quickly, without it. But nevertheless, Dante realizes that as a result of this kind of merger of church and state, you've got popes who have armies, you've got popes who are obsessed with money and power. And so Dante wants to keep the spheres of, you may say, Caesar and God separate. And again, Dante is standing on firm biblical ground, render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and render unto God the things that are God's. So for Dante, the job of the clerical authorities is the administration of the church. Dante doesn't deny that the church has land, it has monasteries, it does have physical property, but its main goal is to be the shepherd of souls. And for Dante, it is the emperor, the Christian emperor, whose main job it is to rule the society and to be the maker and also the enforcer and administrator of laws. So when I pick this up next time, I'll come back to Constantine and another very strange guy we find in heaven, a Trojan warrior who lived centuries before Christ, a guy by the name of Rephaeus.
Subscribe to the Dinesh D'Souza podcast on Apple, Google, and Spotify. Or watch on Rumble, YouTube, and SalemNow.com.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.